From Washington, D.C., across the nation and around the world, stand by for an overview of the hottest topics and people being discussed on air, online, at the coffee shop and across the backyard fence, powered by the research of Talkers Magazine, The National Conversation. It's time for the Michael Harrison Wrap. Here's Michael Harrison.
Thank you, Victoria Jones. Monday, October 25th through Friday, October 29th, 2021. It was a week of high-pressure 11th-hour federal budget negotiations, alarm over inflation in the supply chain, the January 6th investigation, a horrifying deadly accident on the set of a movie, cyclone bombs, tension in Taiwan, and intense political drama on the school board level. And that's just for starters. We'll hear from the dynamic syndicated radio duo from California, Armstrong and Getty, who bring their down-to-earth rock and roll radio roots to the sensibilities of today's news talk broadcasting. And the mild-mannered conservative mayor of Knox County, Tennessee, Glenn Jacobs, who in another life was, and occasionally might still be, the 7-foot masked demon from hell, who more than once wore the World Heavyweight Championship belt in the WWE under the pseudonym Kane. This is the power-packed one-hour show with a week's load of content featuring opinionated yappers from across the country with microphones, smartphones, and digital recording devices sharing their observations as well as the feelings of their target constituents with whom they do their daily dance of affirmation in a fragmented, noisy world where we try to avoid the modern-day syndrome of seeking victory at the expense of truth. Welcome to the Michael Harrison Wrap. Heard coast to coast and around the world on great radio stations in the U.S. and the U.K. An examination of the past week's hottest political and social topics discussed in the American talk media and played out in the theater of your mind. Information's gathered from a variety of sources, including data tracked by the broadcasting trade publication Talkers Magazine, of which I'm editor and publisher. Fasten your Sea Crane earbuds. Speaking of which, this installment of the Michael Harrison Wrap is sponsored in part by the good folks and electronic geniuses at Sea Crane, makers and distributors of great radios. Visit their website at seacrane.com or give them a call at 800-522-8863. Okay, here we go. Joining us now is Kevin Casey, executive editor of Talkers Magazine. Kevin, give us a rundown of the 10 most talked about stories on talk shows in America this past week.
Thank you, Michael. At number 10 this week, the World Series tied with the countdown to Halloween. The long baseball season comes to an exciting climax this weekend as the underdog Atlanta Braves take on the big bad Houston Astros, considered by many baseball observers to be the villains of America's national pastime.
On the holiday front, Halloween continues to grow as one of the most commercially active American holidays. Americans spend an average of $86 per person on Halloween items. Spending on costumes for children, teens, adults, and pets is estimated to reach $3 billion this year, and Halloween candy generates over $2 billion each year. Parents, beware of the increased impact of political correctness in choosing costumes for your kids. Avoid ethnic appropriation and stereotypes, and anything having to do with Squid Game is a no-no at many schools because of the program's violent theme.
At number 9, the Rust shooting. The nation was shocked by the story of the seemingly accidental shooting death of an up-and-coming young cinematographer by Alec Baldwin on the set of a film in Santa Fe, New Mexico.
And the investigation is bringing to light revelations about its cause, ranging from sheer incompetence and neglect on the part of its assistant director to who knows what.
At number 8, a three-way tie between the Facebook papers, social media influence on society, and the troubled state of journalism. Whistleblower information continues to suggest a culture of systemic corruption and societal irresponsibility at the mega social media platform.
And all of social media is under the spotlight of scrutiny in this age of misinformation and fake news. By the way, this weekend marks the 83rd anniversary of one of the historic landmarks in fake news, the Orson Welles 1938 Mercury Theater broadcast of his theatrical adaptation of the H.G. Wells sci-fi thriller War of the Worlds.
At number 7, climate change and harsh weather. The nation has been battered this week by tornadoes, bomb cyclones, atmospheric rivers, a nor'easter, and destructive flooding.
All of which keep climate change among the top topics on the talkers chart.
At number 6 this week, U.S.-China relations highlighted by the Taiwan military alert. President Biden indicates the U.S. is ready to defend Taiwan in the case of a potentially looming invasion of the democratically governed island nation by China just off its mainland.
Which is not in keeping with his policy of international military ambiguity. As it stands, the brewing trouble with Taiwan puts the U.S. in a very difficult situation should China's nearby war games continue to escalate. This ain't good.
At 5, a three-way tie between the immigration crisis, race relations, and the increase of crime and violence in many of the nation's urban centers. Humanitarian issues on the U.S. southern border are getting worse by the day, with no immediate solution in sight.
And shoplifting in San Francisco has reportedly grown to an alarming level in the face of a diminished police presence on the streets.
At 4, a three-way tie between the January 6 investigation, Donald Trump's continuing claims of 2020 election fraud, and the Virginia gubernatorial race. The clock is ticking in the race between the Special Select Committee's efforts to gather testimonial and smoking gun evidence to officially implicate former President Trump as a key instigator in a premeditated insurrection against the government of the United States and the 2022 midterm election, which a victorious GOP-controlled Congress could reduce to simply being a peaceful demonstration that escalated into a riot. And not an insurrection.
Meantime, in other national political news, all eyes are on the closely contested Virginia governor election to replace outgoing Democratic Governor Ralph Northam, who's leaving due to term limits. It pits GOP nominee businessman Glenn Youngkin against Democratic nominee and former governor Terry McAuliffe. The ballot also includes teacher Princess Blanding on the newly formed Libertarian Party ticket, who could be a factor in determining the outcome.
At 3, COVID-19 vaccines, masks, mandates, politics, and highly volatile school board issues. There's been a huge buzz on talk radio about syndicated host Dan Bongino's threat to quit his primetime midday show, recently launched on hundreds of stations as a replacement for Rush Limbaugh, if his company, Cumulus Media, doesn't reverse its policy mandating employees be vaccinated.
Bongino is vaccinated. That's not what this is about. He says he's doing this in defense of the rights of his fellow employees to refuse vaccination.
At 2, the economy, including supply chain, inflation, and labor issues. Once again, it's the economy, stupid. As Americans grow increasingly alarmed about the rising cost of housing, food, and fuel, as well as growing delays in the delivery of goods to stores, warehouses, businesses, and homes.
The nation's ports are suffering from an unprecedented number of cargo ships waiting to unload amidst all kinds of theories and misinformation as to the cause of the situation, which for the most part remains vague. Experts say that the backup is being caused by labor shortages, holiday buying surges, and other COVID-19-related issues. But as the saying goes, who the hell knows?
And at 1 this week, federal budget negotiations. This, of course, ties into the aforementioned economic situation.
The number being thrown around now is down from $3.5 trillion to somewhere in the neighborhood of $1.5 to $2 trillion. I'm sure Joe Manchin is relishing his 15 minutes of fame. Thank you, Kevin Casey from Talkers Magazine. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap.
Ladies and gentlemen, we interrupt our program of dance music to bring you a special bulletin from the Intercontinental Radio News. At 20 minutes before...
We take you now to Grover's Mill, New Jersey.
Grover's Mill, I guess it's one of the few towns that's become famous for something that never happened.
Hey, in case you haven't noticed, it's Halloween weekend, and one of the historical milestones about the holiday, as I mentioned before, that interests journalism and radio buffs like me, is the anniversary of Orson Welles' infamous Mercury Theater broadcast on the CBS radio network of H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds. Joining us now to discuss it is the executive director of the D.C. radio company, Victoria Jones. Victoria, it's crazy that the War of the Worlds broadcast took place on 83 years ago, and we still find it fascinatingly relevant. Crazy stuff.
It's absolutely crazy. And the thing is, I believe it could happen now. I think if it was well enough done, people would believe it, because we believe deep fakes, we believe conspiracies, because we want to, because things are plausible to us, and deep fakes have come a long way since Orson Welles. And Orson Welles was the perfect guy because he was so brilliant, and it was amazingly well done. And it had never been done before.
Well, you know, there's a lot of different views historically on this whole subject. Some people, say that and Orson Welles led, he fed into the misunderstandings as well, because he was kind of a character when it came to having an understanding of the power of media and how you can fool people and then get the benefit of the publicity that comes from it. So he was accused over the years, immediately after the event and then during the years that followed it, he was accused of having done it on purpose, that it wasn't just an innocent exercise in radio theater, but that he knew it would come across as real, even though they did a disclaimer at the beginning, because people don't always hear the whole thing. They tune in, they're going up and down the dial, especially when radio was such a main medium, and they go, oh my gosh, listen to this. There are Martians landing in New Jersey. And they have death rays, and people were very frightened about a possible civilization on Mars at that time, because there were scientists that were saying they saw canals and changes in the colors and all that. So, he's accused of having done it on purpose. And at first he denied it. Then later in his life, he said that that might, in fact, be the case a little bit. It's all kind of vague. And the other crazy thing about the story's inconsistencies, and this is also fake news or just poor journalism, and we still don't know for sure, was that the whole story itself about how people were panicked across the country and committing suicide and all that, that was overblown and that it really had hardly a ripple of impact upon the public. So it's crazy. What do you think happened? Do you think he did it on purpose, or do you think that the whole story has possibly been overblown?
As to the overblown, the more I hear about it and the more I've delved into it over the years, because I'm fascinated by it, the more recent research seems to indicate that it was overblown and people loved reporting all these suicides and all this, and that there wasn't nearly as much or hardly any. And it was great to report that. So I think that was vastly overblown. So that's what I think about that. As far as Orson Welles, he was a character. He was fascinating. I think he did it for various reasons. I think it was irresistible as theater, for a start. And secondly, it wouldn't surprise me if he thought, oh yeah, I'm a bit of a huckster. I mean, if you think about a movie like The Third Man, what an amazing movie. And there's a little bit of hucksterism in that movie too. One of the best post-World War II movies ever made, and there's an element of hucksterism in that. And he's incredible. I think it's one of the best films I've ever seen in my life. And yeah, I think he's capable of multiple motives.
I also find it an interesting coincidence that Orson Welles and H.G. Wells have the same name. You look back to the original work, and here on Halloween weekend, we still get into horror movies. The movie Halloween has a reboot, that's out right now, and all the old ones are taken out and played on television, and people like to be scared. But what H.G. Wells originally wrote was quite scary, especially since people believed that the communist Martians existed. It's not that different than our fear today about those that are other.
No, it's not. Those that are other existing on this earth and existing beyond this earth. And the H.G. Wells, and I may have got my Wellses mixed up earlier, the H.G. Wells book, which was set in England, and of course the invasion that Orson Welles did was in New Jersey, is that of course they're identical, really. The England one is set in this bucolic, perfect part of England where you couldn't imagine anything terrible ever happening, and that's exactly why he set it there, because he wrote about how he loved the idea of all these atrocities happening there. He used the word atrocities, and it's this perfect place. It's the kind of thing you see, in Downton Abbey, that sort of place. And he loved that idea. And it's like, wow, what kind of imagination is that? here, for example, this comes from that original H.G. Wells War of the Worlds. Yet across the gulf of space, minds that are to our minds as ours are to those of the beasts that perish, intellects vast and cool and unsympathetic, regarded this earth with envious eyes, and slowly and surely drew their plans against us.
That sounds like something that we would say today on News Talk Radio about all our enemies around the world. Of course, unfortunately, it's true. That's Victoria Jones, Executive Director of the DC Radio Company. Coming up next, Armstrong and Getty on political correctness, supply chain economics, school board political fireworks, and much, much more. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap. Fellow radio lover, C. Crane specializes in high-quality radios and radio-oriented audio products. This week, I want to tell you about the new portable CC Radio EP Pro. It has simple controls with superior selectivity and sensitivity. It's truly a super radio, built for ease of use and outstanding long-range AM. FM performance is excellent. Best AM radio for the money. The EP Pro has separate bass and treble adjustment controls with a 5-inch speaker that's combined with a high-fidelity amplifier. AM programs can be adjusted to sound like FM because of a wide, narrow enhancement switch and the fine-tuning of the twin-coil ferrite antenna. C. Crane is the place to go for radios of all types. Find a perfect radio for yourself or a super cool gift for that radio lover in your life. Call 800-522-8863. That's 800-522-8863 or visit them online at ccrane.com. ccrane.com. Continuing now with the Michael Harrison Wrap. Political correctness, the cancel culture, COVID vaccination mandates, supply chain breakdowns, and the influence of Donald Trump upon the GOP are among this week's hottest topics. We discussed them in a recent conversation I had with the nationally syndicated radio talk show duo of Jack Armstrong and Joe Getty for my weekly podcast, The Michael Harrison Interview. Armstrong and Getty are based out of California, where they're heard on major stations in Los Angeles, San Francisco, San Diego, and Sacramento, and then some. Although they've been doing news talk for the past 30 years, their roots, like mine, are in rock radio, and they still maintain a bit of that irreverent, fun-loving attitude. Here's an excerpt from our recent conversation. How simpatico are the two of you politically at this point?
I'd say there's a huge overlap in terms of basic political principles, the way we see the country, the way we think policy ought to work. You know, foreign policy sometimes, you know, we'll disagree. Often, you know, but it's not pre-planned. It's not programmed or premeditated. And so we'll see different aspects of a particular topic differently and get into it over that. But it's pretty well aligned. We're kind of libertarian, conservative types. We just want, you know, less government, generally speaking.
Yeah, you both come from my kind of radio in terms of
circus
my roots.
Folk. We both come from circus folk. We grew up in the circus.
Well, in a way you did, but it's a different kind of circus. But it certainly has been called a circus.
Yeah, true that.
My roots were in album rock radio. And so many of my generation of radio broadcasters who came out of that brought the irreverence and brought the political overtones and all of the stuff that went into that to today's news talk radio. And watching you evolve over the years, as I have with great interest, or listening to you evolve over the years, you went from being something that one would expect to hear on a rock station to something now that fits very well, but is still somewhat, just slightly ahead of the curve in the news talk realm. How have you evolved with the world becoming so intense?
You know, I think, and this is either brilliant or idiotic, and time will tell, if we are interested, if we find something compelling, if we're pissed off about something or think it's hilarious, we'll just convey that. Again, it's really unpremeditated, which is why we're all over the map. I mean, we'll do dead serious analysis of the Taiwan situation. And then I will talk about, trying to juggle a flashlight, my dog's leash, and my pants are falling down as he's taking a dump on his morning walk. I mean, just that sort of thing. If we're feeling it, I guess we feel like we can convey it to the audience. And if we're right, we succeed. If we're wrong, we don't.
I'd say one thing that we both came out of a music radio background in which you had to really work hard to not offend anybody. And so we still have a little bit of that in the back of our minds, which is particularly handy now. There are things we would say in 2018 that I think you'd lose your job over now. I mean, that's how much the line has changed. So I think having a background of trying to walk that line and not get in trouble has been helpful.
Well, in 2018 or in 2008 or 1998 or 78, 88 or even 68, as you go back, and there was the emergence of shock jocks and, you know, people like Howard Stern, although they got in trouble with the FCC, they were basically considered cultural heroes because they were pushing the envelope of the new language in America and what you could say to stand up to the government and the FCC. That's all in reverse now, and no longer are radio personalities encouraged by companies to go out to the end of the limb and go as far as you can, but if you get caught, you know, it's like the old Mission Impossible, the secretary will disavow any knowledge of your mission.
Yeah, exactly.
So now it's the opposite. It's don't say anything. We have no stomach for controversy here. The political correctness has become somewhat stifling.
Well, first of all, that's absolutely true. We have a pretty good sense of where the line is, and the line changes pretty rapidly, and different groups all of a sudden grab the national consciousness, and whether it was, I noticed, you know, in your latest talkers, you're writing about Grant Napier, for instance, who happens to be a friend of mine, and he was a guy, if you're not familiar, he was the voice of the Sacramento Kings forever. He's a beautiful guy. He is the furthest thing from a racist in the world. In fact, if I can get on my high horse, Grant has raised so much money for underprivileged children of color in the Sacramento region and sent them to school. He's a freaking hero. But anyway, he got baited into a Twitter thing at the precise moment that the post-George Floyd death feeling was the most feverish. And so at that moment, he got sucked in and said something totally innocent, but that it was a hot button at the time. And so I think you really have to have a sense, and maybe it's from obsessively following the news and social media and the rest, you have to have a sense of where the line is, because it changes every damn day.
It does, every single day. And I guess having a sense of that is a survival technique. Although somewhere I feel, you know, kind of in my gut that this overwhelming level of political correctness and even the line changing every day is opening the door for a new market. It's just who has the courage to step into it. And that is for somebody to come back and be like a new Howard Stern, or all the way back to Lenny Bruce. I mean, we considered people like that heroes. You think possibly that we'll see coming soon an opening for the pendulum to go back against this stifling political correctness to something that might be wild on the other side, or at least more even keeled?
I don't see how it could happen on broadcast radio unless some company really decided to change their attitudes on this sort of thing. It can happen if you're, you know, the recent David Chappelle thing on Netflix. One of the reasons he took the liberties he took is he's so ungodly rich already, and Netflix makes so much money off of him that he was somewhat protected. You know, a small comedian that didn't mean that much to Netflix, they'd have cut him loose right away with the same commentary. So you have to be either uncancelable because of your wealth, or I think podcasting. There are a number of people, you know, like Joe Rogan. You can't cancel a podcast. You could go after the advertisers, but they're in some form. You can't really cancel a podcast.
Do you think there's although Spotify kind of got their panties in a wad and more or less tried to.
Sense it's had any effect on his content, though.
No, probably not. But the one thing, Michael, that we believe in is if we, you know, if we're under the microscope because of the disease, even if we have to be a little bit careful about what we say, and we're not super careful, but we need to fight the disease. We need to be preaching every day about the value of free speech and how the great philosophers of the history of mankind have been absolutely singing in unison that to get a true understanding of an idea or to get to the whole truth, you need that collision of voices and opinions. And yeah, some of them are going to be offensive. So we're crusaders against the new Puritanism, 100%.
Mm-hmm. Which doesn't mean you can't criticize what people say.
Oh, of course not. Yeah, that's fair game.
Free speech doesn't mean freedom from other people's response to your speech. And this is where we get into all kinds of murkiness about the First Amendment, which is probably my only political platform. I try to be apolitical as much as possible. I'll comment on common sense issues, but I try to maintain a nonpartisan position. But I'm a champion of free speech, but in doing so, I find myself sometimes being misunderstood. Hey, as a champion of free speech, how could you say that that was irresponsible to say on the air? Well, responsibility is the thing that keeps free speech in balance with reality. And so many people don't understand the nature of the First Amendment versus just the concept of free speech, how private platforms can censor. That's part of their free speech. That free speech works in two ways, and it does not guarantee you a platform, and it does not protect you from negative blowback.
Oh, absolutely. I do think talk radio gets more leeway than television does, for instance. You can say things on talk radio and survive it that they never survive on TV for whatever reason.
Yeah, and to your other point, we have enough partners, business partners, that we are cognizant of their needs and their vulnerabilities and the rest of it. And we're not such egomaniacs, and we're not Dave Chappelle rich, that we've got to maintain those relationships and not put them in a spot that's extremely difficult. On the other hand, and we make this point repeatedly on the air, if the corporate interests of America don't stand up for what is good and right about our political culture in the United States, we're going to lose it. And so, yeah, we've called on corporations to show a little more balls and defend their people, to have the courage to say, no, my people were right. It may be controversial, but it is not hate speech. It's just something you disagree with. So, go on your way.
Well, let's talk about disagreement, because not everything comes under, dirty or offensive to races and ethnicities, but some of it is just everyday partisan political discussion.
Sure, and like vaccines and mandates and that sort of stuff.
Type of thing. Have you found that the feedback that you get, because feedback is such an important part of media today, nobody can deny it. We're constantly getting feedback from audiences via digital media. Have you found that the feedback can be brutally nasty and upsetting?
Only every day.
more so than before.
Oh, absolutely.
And how do you feel about it? Does it get to you? Do you ever just say, damn it, I can't take this anymore? A lot of people in the business, they confide in me. They tell me it's depressing, even though they try to act like it doesn't bug them, that it does.
Well, don't read the comments. I think that's one thing Joe and I have committed to on Twitter. Anyway, just don't read the comments. You're setting yourself up for misery.
Yeah, although Jack goes through the texts throughout the show, and I go through the emails during the show and a lot after before the next show. And the one comment I've made more than any other to friends and people I run into in real life who want to know about the job is, I say, it's gotten less fun because everybody's so angry all the time. But I suppose we fight back by having a sense of humor about the world.
What are the issues that are of concern to you and your audience?
Here's the two biggest issues for the rest of the year, I think. One, if your local school district mandates the vaccine, are you going to get your kids vaccinated? Is going to be huge around the country. The other one that everybody's going to be talking about this constantly as we get closer to Christmas, this whole supply chain issue. When people can't buy stuff for Christmas, oh, my God. When people really wake up to the supply chain thing and gas is as high as it is.
Well, I was going to say inflation, in a related story. So those are enormous. Just, a narrower focus. I mean, on today's radio show, we hammered the new information about the NIH funding, what certainly appears to be gain-of-function research and combination with the Wuhan Institute of Virology, Dr. Fauci's apparent dishonesty following that, and Glenn Greenwald with some absolutely devastating and fabulous criticism of the mainstream media's covering for the Communist Chinese, and for whatever reason, acting as if even inquiring about the actual origin of the virus, somehow acting as though that is out of bounds, which is an astounding act of your ideology trumping your common sense and professional ethics, in my opinion.
I also think if Joe Biden wanders away from the White House in his bathrobe, that's going to be a big story.
Are you pointedly opinionated about these issues? You hinted at some of your opinions, but how do you deal with the issues you've just talked about specifically when you're out there on the field of combat, so to speak?
Well, like the vaccine thing for kids. I mean, in my mind, I'd like to believe, no, you're not going to make my kid get a vaccine to go to school. My kids have already had the COVID just this last week. But in reality, what am I going to do? Pull my kids out of school, start a brand new school over this? Probably not. So I don't even know the answer to that one in my own mind.
Yeah, one thing that we do that's really different than a lot of the other conservative talk radio shows, and maybe it's the reason we're not zillionaires, although we do fine, is that instead of saying, for instance, this mandate is clearly monstrous and awful, it's Big Brother, it's communism come to America, and just really, really whip people up. You know, Jack will say stuff like that. Yeah, I don't like it. I don't think they need it. But am I going to pull my kid out of school? Let me think about this. This is hard because it's hard for a lot of our listeners. You know, I understand the rah-rah kind of preaching to the choir, and I don't mean that, condescendingly, but that's one style of talk radio. Your audience always agrees with you all the time, and it makes them feel good. We turn things over, and we flip them over, and we talk about them, and we scratch our heads, and we will say, I don't know what to think. I'm confused. Mm-hmm. Which is, a little different.
Well, it's a lot different. I call it the daily dance of affirmation. It comes from the tendency now for media, not just talk radio, all media, to target audiences and give them what they like, as opposed to come up with something cool and original and interesting and fascinating and hope to attract an audience that discovers it. It's music has become that way, too. The targeting of audiences, creating prefabricated sounds that people will like, as opposed to crazy artists going in a direction and suddenly people following them. Oh. Does what I'm saying ring a bell?
Oh, yeah. I listen to a lot of commercial country music because my kids are kind of into it. And two, it's like the safest music you can listen to with young kids. But I can hear the focus groups in the songs. I can hear what the latest focus group said a country song should have in it by the lyrics, and it just disgusts me that it's not more creative than that.
That's the nationally syndicated talk radio morning duo, Jack Armstrong and Joe Getty. If you want to hear the extended version of this conversation, please check out this week's installment of my podcast, The Michael Harrison Interview, at mhinterview.com. Coming up next, one of the most successful and demonic professional wrestlers of the past quarter century, who's also the mild-mannered mayor of Knox County, Tennessee. You're plugged into the Michael Harrison Wrap.
This report is brought to you by Genesis 2 Project, G2P. Recently, the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, the ODNI, released a preliminary report on possible threats posed by UFOs, now known as Unidentified Aerial Phenomena, UAP, and the progress the Department of Defense UAP Task Force has made in understanding any threats. Dr. J.C. Van Valkenburg is a former Los Alamos National Lab biophysicist who has been working with G2P to bring scientifically sound UAP data to the public.
G2P has released the first scientifically authenticated documentation of UAPs, including images captured with infrared technology. Primo Forensics performed the digital forensic analysis.
In tandem with the ODNI report, these data support the development of relevant processes, policies, technologies, and training for the U.S. military and government personnel upon encountering UAP. Visit Genesis2Project.com.
Continuing now with the Michael Harrison Wrap as we discuss the hottest topics of the past week in the national conversation. The first-term Republican mayor of Knox County, Tennessee's name is Glenn Jacobs. He's a conservative with libertarian leanings. But there's more to his background than just politics. Many of you listening across the nation will know him by his alter ego, the 7-foot-tall, masked, demonic professional wrestler known as Kane.
In wrestling, I played a character, and that was one of the differences between my character, Kane, and The Undertaker, and virtually everyone else in WWE. And I think that part of the reason that my character was successful is because it is a character. You know, most of everybody else in professional wrestling, they're a personality which is in some way them turned up. It's like they say, you turn it up to 11. Whereas in my case, it was completely different. So, in that respect, you know, there is no like balancing anything, because that was character that I played, that was job, and this is a different job. What's great about this is I can be the real me, and you know, I don't have to play a character anymore. It's funny, Michael, when I was campaigning, I would always say that, you know, most politicians try to convince people they are the person they see on TV. I was down to convince people that I wasn't the person that saw on TV. So, you know, but in any case, you know, that's that as far as, you know, how balancing those two things. And when they say, you know, politics is a big departure from wrestling, well, not really. I mean, there's politics in everything that we do. Government, of course, is a little different. But even in WWE, there's politics in that. Your interpersonal relationship skills are very important, and those sort of things. So I've tried to take the lessons that I've learned there and in other parts of my life and apply them to the government realm as well.
It's similar to if you were an actor. I mean, people wouldn't ask that question to Arnold Schwarzenegger and say, how could you, you know, balance being the governor of California with the Terminator or, you know, one of the characters you've played. You're absolutely right. I hadn't thought about that the role of Kane and some of the other characters you played were so over the top and in some cases wearing masks and all kinds of costumes that it wasn't, you know, your real name and now you're a good guy and now you're a bad guy. It was a complete departure, and it makes a total amount of sense. You know, it's funny. I always wondered about wrestlers. How could they work with masks? And now, you know, the mask, a whole different meaning of the mask in the pandemic.
We're all finding that out.
I can't imagine what it would be like to be sweating under that mask and breathing and all of that. And, you know, you just said it. We're all finding it out. There's an irony to the whole mask thing, and I'm sure I'm not the first person to bring it up to you, because your role as mayor over the last few years has been very, very involved in the anti-vax mandates and mandates in general. So I just find it ironic. I said, now you have a whole different perspective on the mask. That being said, you got a lot of national attention for writing a letter to President Biden when he made his speech and announced his plans on having vax mandates, in terms of companies with more than 100 employees. And you have been outspoken about that. What is the status of your stance on the whole mandate issue at this point?
Well, it hasn't changed. I've been consistent throughout the pandemic, and I don't believe that government should be issuing these mandates. You know, government in America is there to protect our freedom, not to trample on it. That is the American tradition. That's why this country was founded. If you read the Declaration of Independence, that's specifically what Thomas Jefferson said that governments are created to do, is to protect our natural rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And that hasn't changed. That will never change with me. I'm not anti-vax. You know, I'm against the mandates, and I believe that all of these things should be left up to the individual for themselves to decide. You know, certainly we look at masks. You know, look, if a store wants to say, or a restaurant, you have to wear a mask to come into our place, that's their decision. It shouldn't be forced on them by government. Same with the shot. Okay, in this case, you know, it shouldn't be government saying you have to do this. You know, and it's different with, you know, you always get this comparison like smallpox vaccines and all that. You know, one thing I will say about this, and we call it a vaccine, but it doesn't stop the spread of the disease, whereas like smallpox vaccines do. So from a public health perspective, you know, when we're talking, and the same with masks, you know, the whole idea behind public health law is you stop to stop a public health hazard from spreading. But if you can't prove that it does that, you don't have a basis for implementing these things other, in this case, I believe, because the federal government is engaged in a massive power grab and extreme overreach. So that has not changed, and that will not change.
You know, it's a very difficult thing to explain because it's become so politicized, and you do a very good job of it. I find it frustrating that when it comes to First Amendment, when it comes to government overreach, when it comes to these type of laws and, you know, the Constitution, it gets kind of murky in the political fighting that goes on. And it's interesting you said, I'm not anti-vax, I'm anti-mandate. It is a very difficult thing to enforce unpopular laws. And I guess that has to be taken into account when legislatures and legislators take it upon themselves, or even executives to, with executive orders to make laws. Have you, obviously, being a libertarian or having libertarian instincts, you probably have thought deeply about that what good is a law if it's unenforceable and or is going to create further strife?
Absolutely. Here in Knox County, we had a mask mandate. That was not my decision. I sat on a board of health that was making that decision. I voted against the mask mandate. The sheriff said that he wasn't going to enforce it, and there really wasn't any sort of enforcement mechanism or any punishment. And everybody said, we don't want there to be any punishment for this. So it's like, well, why are you implementing a mandate then? If you're going to say that people have to do this, and you're going to use you were saying you want to force the law behind it. Well, that's what government does. It's not pretty, but the role of government in a society is to say you are going to do this or you're going to get in trouble. And you know, why are we wasting everyone's time? And also, we're diminishing respect for other laws when you do that, because when you have all these laws on the books and they can't be enforced and no one really pays attention, well, then they start not paying attention to the important stuff, like we're seeing in San Francisco with shoplifting. You know, so I really think that not only is it wrong to do that in that it's ineffective, but it's actually counterproductive to a peaceful and an orderly society.
We see this syndrome play out in terms of immigration law. We see this syndrome play out in terms of gun laws. Most of the laws are already on the books that people claim we need more laws to protect us from various and sundry infractions of civil behavior. But actually, if we enforce the laws that are on the books, we really wouldn't have the debate about making new laws. And that's something that also kind of confounds me. And I get the feeling I get the feeling that you agree with me on that, or I agree with you.
Yeah, absolutely. The solution isn't just to keep on piling more laws, because then everything gets so complex and no one can understand them. And I think James Madison, I can't remember the exact quote, but he talks about when society's laws become so voluminous that you don't even understand them anymore, no one's going to respect law and order in that case. And unfortunately, that's kind of where we've gotten to with everything going on. So yeah, I'm right with you. I'm very, I scratch my head sometimes. Like, you already have stuff addressing that. Why are we going to add another layer of laws that we are not going to enforce on top of the other layer of laws that we don't enforce?
Exactly. It just doesn't make any sense. It's really absurd. And yet half to three quarters of the conversation we have in the political debates today is about creating new laws that are basically already on the books.
I would argue let's take some off the books is what I would argue.
Well, you know what it is? There's a thing called social pressure. If we weren't arguing over laws and enforcement, but rather morality and common sense, There would be a lot more compromise, I think, over some of these very, very sensitive, polarized issues that we actually agree on them. We, meaning the left, the right, Democrats, Republicans, but are not in agreement that they should be backed by the force of government, but rather the force of social pressure. I think abortion would certainly be something that, if it was discussed on that level,
we did
it to a great degree with smoking cigarettes and tobacco. But you're saying, sure, what are your thoughts about that? Go ahead.
Well, I think you're exactly right. And I think also one of the problems is with the federal government now is basically kicking federalism to the curb, that we all do agree, okay, we need laws against murder, we need laws against violent crimes, and so forth, but we're going to disagree on some stuff. You know, here in the South, we're going to say, no, you know, we don't need all these gun laws, okay? Here in the South, we're going to say we're pro-life. You know, we believe that abortion is murder in most cases, and there should be a law against that. So wouldn't it be great if we could, in Tennessee, with these issues that are divisive and that we don't agree on, wouldn't it be great if we had a system here, you know, a set of laws that allowed us to follow our collective morality and our collective thoughts? California, you know, okay, you want to ban certain guns, that's fine. You know, y'all want to have abortion easy access, that's fine. Leave us alone and we'll leave you alone. And that's what federalism was all about. Unfortunately, that's gone by the wayside, but I think that's ultimately the solution. And then, you know, you see people would go different places where they agreed with the laws that are in place. Mm-hmm. That makes sense?
Well, it does make sense. People go places where they agree with other things that are in place. People go places where they agree with the tax structure. They go places where they feel that they'll be among like-minded people. And we have constant migration in this country. Since I'm a kid, it's amazing how certain states that were once called sleepy states that nobody cared about are now major population centers. And I think most Americans would be shocked if they saw the list of the most populous cities. the places they think are the big ones are way lower on the list, and places that you thought were secondary cities are up in the top 20. It's amazing how the demographics have changed and how fluid it all is.
I'm going to share a statistic with you. For the first 6 months of 2021, Knoxville was 12th among American metro areas for net migration, as far as the number of people moving in versus the people,
that's out. That's a big time
number. When I moved here 30 years ago, you know, most people didn't even know where Knoxville is. And now it has become, and Tennessee in general has become, a popular place for people to move to.
You ran as a Republican, and you are obviously a Republican, and word is that you're going to run again in 22. It's a 4-year term. But you are also described as a libertarian. And this conversation is on two platforms. It's on our national radio show, on news talk stations, and it's also on our podcast, which is listened to very heavily by people in the broadcasting business. So they're all pretty familiar with what the Libertarian Party and libertarian thinking is about. And there is a crossover between Republican Party politics and Libertarian Party politics, capital L or small L, being a school of thought. What is the state of the libertarian movement at this point in time in America?
That is a really good question, actually. And you described everything very well that I would have said in response, you know, kind of to the question of libertarians and Republicans and all that sort of stuff. When you look at, I believe that libertarians and liberty-minded people, I believe that the Republican Party is a natural home for them. When we think about Ronald Reagan, and I'm a Ronald Reagan Republican. Reagan once said libertarianism is the heart of conservatism.
That's Glenn Jacobs, mayor of Knox County, Tennessee, also known as Kane, the former WWE heavyweight champion wrestler. You can listen to the entire conversation from which this piece was excerpted on my podcast, The Michael Harrison Interview, at mhinterview.com, beginning this coming Tuesday. And that about does it for this latest installment of the Michael Harrison Wrap, an overview of the national conversation looking back at the week of Monday, October 25th through Friday, October 29th, 2021. 1971. Looking ahead, I'm sure we'll have plenty to talk about next week, including the ever-lurking unknown factor, that unanticipated surprise story that can take the national conversation spinning off in a totally unexpected direction. We sure do live in interesting times. I could be reached via email at michael@talkers.com. My podcast, The Michael Harrison Interview, can be heard at mhinterview.com. And if you want to stay in touch with the inner workings of the talk media industry, please visit talkers.com. The Michael Harrison Wrap. Our producer is Matthew B. Harrison. Thank you for listening.
The Michael Harrison Wrap is a production of Good Phone Communications in conjunction with Talkers Magazine and Talk Media Network. Copyright 2021, all rights reserved.